Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Welcome to Face to Face. This is a show about change and about what's next. It's a show that wants to ask questions, peel back the layers of our average everyday experience, and go beyond scratching the surface. We interview amazing people with incredible ideas and stories who have done wild, weird, and wonderful things. Remember that imagination shared create collaboration, and collaboration creates community, and community inspires social change. I'm David Peck, and this is Face to Face.
So my next interview is with Fred Peabody. He's a filmmaker, a storyteller, a documentarian who we've had on Face to Face before. We talked to him a couple of years ago when his new film premiered at TIFF, I believe, All Governments Lie. And so it was a real pleasure to have Fred back on the show. We certainly had plenty to talk about. And really what we were here to talk about was his new film, or is his new film, The Corporate Coup d'Etat, which is going to be coming out at Hot Docs. So make sure you get out to see it. And I'm sure there's going to be a theatrical release down the road, and look for it, you know, coming soon to some sort of video on demand service near you. Fred and I don't waste any time, and we get right into it, and we talk about, you know, impression and power and democracy and corporatism, cash and control. How's that for alliteration? We get into this, you know, this whole sea of digital information that we are, you know, surrounded by and in some respects kind of drowning in, I suppose, abandoned libraries. And we talk about offshore manufacturing and free enterprise and the unconscious civilization, and how important this notion is, but also the book and John Ralston Saul and this book that was written, in this prophetic piece written back in the 90s. We talk about compassion and the other and reality TV and why Donald Trump for Fred is the fast talking salesman. There's some real wonderful moments in this film, and you're gonna wanna dial in. It's the kind of film that you might want to write an essay about, but it's not academic. It is and it isn't. There's comedic moments and there's thoughtful bits, and it's a deeply engaging piece. So stay tuned not only for the conversation but also for the film, as I said, coming soon to a theater near you. Fred Peabody coming right up, talking about The Corporate Coup d'Etat. And don't forget davidpecklive.com for more information about my writing and my speaking. You can find out a little bit more about what I do there, and reach out to me if need be. And here on Face to Face, you can support the work that I'm doing by getting behind us on patreon.com. Certainly would be appreciated. And if you can't do that, and I do get that, some kind of a review somewhere would be really welcome, especially on iTunes. We'd really appreciate that. And share the interview with others. Share Face to Face with others. We've got a newsletter. You can sign up there. And don't forget rabble.ca for a whole host of other interviews and podcasts and blogs and articles and people that you're going to want to engage with. And don't touch that dial. Coming right up, The Corporate Coup d'Etat, Fred Peabody's new film, at premiering at Hot Docs 2019. Well, welcome to Face to Face. We're joined by, once again, another very special guest here with us today to talk about his new film, The Corporate Coup d'Etat. Fred Peabody is here with us. Fred, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, David. It's great to be back with you again.
And you are a returning guest. So I did a quick little bit of research about 3 years ago, All Governments Lie. Maybe before we start talking about the new film, tell us, kind of other than making this film, what have you been doing since we last chatted?
Well, pretty much just making this film.
Got it.
No time for much else.
No, I bet.
But when we the film that you and I talked about previously that I directed was called All Governments Lie, which is a famous quote by the late great independent journalist I.F. Stone, who's inspired a lot of the younger independent journalists who are some of the best around today, mm-hmm. people like Jeremy Scahill and Amy Goodman and Glenn Greenwald and many others. So that documentary was about how the mainstream corporate media, which most people get their news from, is not doing a very good job mm. of exposing government deception or just checking, what governments are putting out. And instead, the mainstream media tend to act more as a conveyor belt for statements coming out of Washington, out of the State Department, out of the White House. Now, obviously, things have changed a bit with Donald Trump, even though it's the same old game. It's just they have a much different opening front man, so to speak. And that's a whole other story. But
well, and that comes out and that really comes out in the new film. Right. Yeah. I mean, it really does. Would you almost say for those who have seen All Governments Lie, would this almost be a part two to that in a sense? Is that a fair?
It follows on and it expands things. So in All Governments Lie, we were mainly talking about the difference between independent investigative adversarial journalists following in the footsteps of I.F. Stone and contrasting what they were doing with the mainstream corporate media and analyzing why were the corporate media so different. In this new film, The Corporate Coup d'Etat, we are expanding that idea and looking at the overall picture of the influences of basically corporatism and corporate money on democracy, and particularly using it as an example because it's the poster child for this kind of thing, the U.S. system and how the U.S. democracy has been hijacked by corporations and corporate money.
I love the let's get right into it. And by the way, congratulations on the film. I absolutely loved it. It's compelling. Can I say that it's fun to watch? I mean, sometimes I almost feel like that's being disrespectful.
I always forget to mention that. But yeah, I think with both those films, I like to use humor when I can to make important points. And you do want to make it, and we get quite a few laughs.
Well, various
points, laughs which would at things that are making a serious point.
Laughs with implications, right? Comedy with causal connections. How's that for some alliteration? Mm-hmm. And one of my favorites, by the way, and I'm just going to do it right now, is the Trump quote where I forget who the journalist is. So you want to be associated with Mussolini? And he said, no, I want to be associated with interesting quotes. Funniest lines of all time.
It's the long pause. Yeah. After Chuck Todd asks him that question,
Fred.
You clearly see that he realizes he's done something stupid by retweeting a quote by Mussolini, and even though he says, "Oh, I knew it was by Mussolini," I doubt that he did. It's that pause where you. I notice audiences.
It's the silence.
The audiences react usually with laughter.
Well, I know it's a lifelong goal of mine. It's to be associated with interesting quotes. So it really is something to work towards, you know?
Yeah.
Let's start with Gordon Gekko. I love the fact that you took a clip out of the Oliver Stone film. Gekko saying to Charlie Sheen's character, you're not naive enough to believe in democracy, are you?
Yeah.
Was that sort of the premise or the thesis statement almost, or the thesis question for the film Corporate Coup d'Etat?
Well, yeah, it certainly encapsulates that basic idea beautifully. Of course, Oliver Stone, came on board with my previous film as executive producer, which really helped us to just having his name attached to get attention for the film. And with this one, I didn't want to ask him again, but he kind of gave me a helping hand to get my first theatrical documentary, up and running. And so this time I asked him for advice on a rough cut, and he sent me some very helpful advice, and at the same time really praised what I had done in this rough cut with the film. So thank you, Oliver Stone. But that's a perfect, and he did see that clip, and so he knew it was in there. But as in many of his films, he's making really serious points.
Mm-hmm.
And as he says, I'm not a journalist, I'm a dramatist.
Mm-hmm.
So people who nitpick his films and say, oh, well, that didn't exactly happen that way. Well, he's not claiming that this is a journalistic account. But anyway, he at the same time is portraying, problems in the U.S. Political system, in U.S. society. Journalism in the U.S. was not doing a very good job of exposing, and the mainstream corporate media are still not. And that is, again, the slow motion corporate coup d'etat that has taken place over the last few decades, to the point now where billionaires and the Koch brothers and their billionaire friends are totally controlling the U.S. Political process. I don't know if totally is the right word.
Right.
But clearly, because of the huge amounts of cash that the corporations, especially in the U.S. system, are allowed to donate to politicians, they create a monster. And then once the politicians get in, of course they're going to listen to the lobbyists from that very corporation that gave them tons of money.
Is there a sense, I love, by the way, I think once we get to the titles for the film, there's a great sort of shot that, I guess it's not really an establishing shot at that point, but over in the background, there's a train I don't know if it's leaving the station or coming into it, but I couldn't help but smile and thought, as I reflected on what I was about to watch, is it too late? Has the train left the station in a sense? I don't know.
Yeah. I certainly hope not.
I hope not either.
I certainly I try to be an optimist. I think I am an optimist. I have faith in humanity. And, the last thing any of us should be doing is giving up, rather than fighting for a better society, fighting for a just society, so to speak.
Well, and Fred, I think that spirit for me anyway really comes out. I mean, I've often thought of myself and even, sort of introduced myself to people as a hopeful cynic. I mean, there's this sense of realism and cynicism. You watch a film like this and you go, wow, if 30% of this is true, we are so screwed,
Yeah.
And yet...
I love that. I love those two words.
Yeah.
That's a great description, hopeful cynic. I may rip you off with on that one.
Well, go.
But yeah, that kind of
go right
describes
ahead.
I guess the way I feel. That of course we have to be highly skeptical. We have to be critical thinkers, and we almost all have to be investigative journalists. I tell people that in the sense that you've got, especially with the internet. I mean, you have to check out whatever is coming to you, and it might be coming to you through Facebook or Twitter or emails from your cousin, but you've got to go on and do the research to find out what is the credibility of
Well, and isn't that sort of one of the I mean, there's so many points in your film, and any great film to me, any great doc is about so many things other than actually what you're watching about. There's so much more going on than meets the eye in a great film. But one of the things that Chris Hedges talks about near the end of the film is this idea of literacy, right? And being able, and the way you get to critique that is by being connected and by going a little bit deeper than the surface. So be aware of what's going on, but try to reveal, or what's the word I'm looking for? Peel back the layers on the substance. Ask the tough questions.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, we are all immersed in a sea of digital information.
Mm-hmm.
To the point where it's sometimes hard to sort it all out. And it's more important now than ever.
Are you guilty, Fred? Are you guilty?
Quiet moments of reflection. I'm very guilty of it.
Well, I was just going to say, are you guilty of ever clicking on those? What do they call those? Clickbait, where the it's like some weird article about some movie star or something.
I definitely. It's
same.
Almost like a head slapper. Like, oh my god, I've gone to this. You know, what have I done? And yeah, you've got to. You can smell it pretty fast when it's something, it's pretty true.
Well, I think
it's just clickbait.
It raises some pretty interesting questions, as does the film, but this idea of a sea of digital information, how do you filter it out? How do you deal with it?
Yeah.
Is it in a community? Yeah. Or, you know, do you raise children who ask questions? Do you encourage that in your team at work, wherever you choose to work? Does it change the way you teach and all those things, right? By the way, I got to say, what a delightful the meeting of Cornel West and John Rostensall over tea. I would have loved to have been there for that conversation, by the way. It's just talking about peeling back the layers.
I was so happy that we were able to just to be there to film that scene and to get the two of them together. And I think that's another way that, you know, we all need to kind of figure out whose books should I be reading?
Right.
Books, you know, and not just Twitter. I mean, Twitter's great because it's often has links, especially if you follow good journalists, it has links to long form articles. But even beyond good long form articles, you know, reading books, as you mentioned that Chris Hedges is advocating for towards the end of the film, the books are there, but nobody reads them, I think is the quote by him. And the picture that we have over that, that's voiceover a little bit. And you're looking at this abandoned library in Camden, New Jersey, which is a perfect metaphor for what he's saying. It's an old abandoned building that we visit earlier in the film,
right,
when one of the locals, who may be part of the drug user community, but had some interesting things to say, and that, I don't think he was on drugs at the time, but told us about, you know, seeing someone who had overdosed on the steps of that abandoned library in Camden. And I believe it's a library that was built in the 1800s. And now it's got trees growing up right in the middle of the building. It's a sad metaphor.
Well, a lot of your film, it seems to me, and I'm pretty sure I remember this from All Governments Lie, very much about juxtaposition and maybe even paradox, contradiction, I suppose. They're sort of the same thing. But can you talk a little bit about that? Is that just for emphasis? It's a form of storytelling, right?
Yeah, I'm not sure what you mean by.
Yeah, so, well, just the idea of, you know, the demolition of steel mills, an abandoned hospital, you know, in the film. I mean, these are beautiful metaphors for things.
They're powerful metaphors.
They really are.
Metaphors, particularly in filmmaking, visual metaphors can be extremely powerful. And, you know, many of the filmmakers that I admire, you know, are very good at that. And you don't want to make it too obvious that, hey, here's a visual metaphor. But
right.
But subtly and you know, used, sensitively used, particularly in film, metaphors are very, very powerful and can communicate more than words sometimes. Just I think what you're referring to is the juxtaposition of what the soundtrack is doing with what the picture is doing.
Right.
And yes, yes, I do like that frequently. That contrast just speaks volumes.
Well, just the idea of, you know, is it Camden or Youngstown, I think, where you're showing the decline of the working class and of these steel towns that were all about constructing. They were all about building. They were all about shaping something out of something else. And yet here we're watching them, you know, broken down, overgrown, and in fact, in some cases, being actually demoed. I mean, the deep irony of that just is pretty compelling.
That was in the Rust. Yeah, that was in Youngstown, Ohio, which is sort of the heart of the U.S. Rust Belt. In fact, Youngstown used to be called Steel City, USA, and they had miles of steel mills lining the river in that valley. And now, of course, it's just it is a metaphor for the hollowing out of America by globalization, you know, neoliberalism. Many, many factors have come together to turn that place into a very sad place to live. For many, many, many people who came from, you know, generations of families who made a good living, you know, working class people who had good jobs, union jobs, and now, if they're lucky, you know, they're working two jobs, one at Walmart at minimum wage and another at McDonald's at minimum wage. It's, I don't, and, you know, and you ask, well, how could it have been prevented? That's a tough question.
It's
offshoring of manufacturing had a lot to do with it.
I love the way you show how deeply political something, and I don't want to reduce this, but how something as simple as having a job, having meaningful work, can make all the difference in the world to how you vote, you can't get much more tangible than meaningful work that pays well, that provides for my family. And you want me to do what? You want me to support your party, but you're going to do this instead. And I think what's really interesting to me in the film is how you show this is not really either or here. This is both and. This is Democrats and Republicans who are frankly misbehaving.
Absolutely. And the other thing that makes that Rust Belt town of Youngstown a metaphor, a powerful metaphor for the corporate coup d'etat, so to speak, for the hollowing out of America by untrammeled and unregulated corporatism and unlimited, virtually unlimited political donations to politicians. It's a great metaphor because it's an area that sort of explains how we ended up with President Donald Trump, or they ended up. Thank God we are Canadians.
Right. But,
we do not have similar problems here. Google SNC Labline.
Right, right.
Well,
direct connection. It shows the power of the personal. It shows how important responsibility and choice and these things really are. It seems to me. I thought that was a fascinating sort of layer to the film. Tell me, did you read The Unconscious Civilization when it came out in 95? I was actually taking a mass media course at York University at the time and read the book. What was your experience?
Good for you. I came to it. No, I came to it much later than you. Let's see. When did I read it? I think I read it after I I had interviewed Chris Hedges for the previous documentary, All Governments Lie, and also Jeremy Scahill. And actually, here's the circuitous route by which I came to John Ralston Saul's Unconscious Civilization, where he coins the term corporate coup d'etat, or he says something like, you know, and this is in 1995 when he wrote this, that you know, it could be said we were in the midst of a slow motion coup d'etat in which corporatism is strengthening and democracy is weakening.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was such a brilliant, almost prophecy, because I'm not aware of anybody else who quite nailed it like that in 1995. But I remember Jeremy Scahill said something to me in the interview, and Jeremy Scahill is an investigative journalist with The Intercept, which he co-founded along with Glenn Greenwald and Laura Poitras. But he said to me, and I use this in All Governments Lie, you know, what people don't realize is that, you know, we long ago had a coup in this country, a corporate coup in which corporations took over, you know, control of politicians in this country. And I remember thinking at the time, that could be a documentary. So I had a little gleam in my eye. I didn't even know that you could trace that all the way back to John Ralston Saul in 1995. But then months after that, I read a column by Chris Hedges, again, who writes for Truth Dig, really a very good progressive journalism website. And this was in January of 2017, I think. And he said, I've got it up right here. He talks about this thing that Lewis Powell wrote, kind of a infamous memorandum by the guy who was, he was a lawyer for the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. And in 1971, he wrote a memo, which people refer to now as the Powell memo. But it basically was advising how the business community could or should be on its guard because of the attack. The actual title of the memorandum was Attack on the American Free Enterprise System. That was the title. And as Chris Hedges says at the beginning of his article in 2017, this Powell memorandum was, quote, the blueprint for the creeping corporate coup d'etat that 45 years later is complete.
Mm.
And that really jumped out at me. And especially that word blueprint, because it actually triggered another thought for me, which is, as I went on to read the rest of the Hedges article, this article is a blueprint for a documentary.
Right. Nice.
And yeah, that was that article was January 22nd of 2017, probably still on the Truth Dig website. So that kind of all brought it together. And he doesn't mention that. I don't think he mentions in that piece that John Ralston Saul was the guy who first came up with
coined the phrase,
that term. But then as I read other things by Hedges, earlier things, he did attribute it to John Ralston Saul in other articles where he had used that term. So,
question.
So that led me, what a long answer to give you the answer that led me to finally read, to find out where John Ralston Saul said it. It was in the Unconscious Civilization. I probably learned that from a Chris Hedges article from earlier. And so I then read the book.
So do you believe in the immutable bylaws of business, to quote Ned Beatty, is it, from Network? By the way, if anyone's listening and hasn't seen the film Network, you need to call me up and borrow my copy or find one somewhere else, because it's like got to be one of the best films ever made.
You can probably find it on YouTube. You can certainly find the, you know, the most famous scenes.
Yeah, that's right.
And the most famous scene of all is is it Howard Beale?
It's Howard Beale, yeah. Matt as hell, is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. He's yelling out the window, America to go to its windows and open your window and yell out, I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore.
Yeah.
That's the most famous. But the clip that I used is not that clip, and it's less well-known, and it's a scene where this captain of industry, played by Ned Beatty, is talking to Howard Beale, the network anchorman, who's kind of gone off the reservation. Who plays Howard Beale again?
Off the top of my head.
Legendary.
Yeah,
actor.
Yeah.
Legendary actor.
It's not William Holden. It's Peter Finch.
Bingo. Wait a minute. Is it Peter Finch? I'm going to Google it while we're talking.
Okay, got it.
It's not Peter Finch. But anyway, there's a great scene in there. As you say, he's giving a lecture to this anchorman who has, on the air, had the audacity, I think, it's so long since I saw the movie.
Well, it's 1976, right? Speaking of prophetic voice, right?
Yeah. And he says, something to the effect that you talk about the nations of today, I'll tell you who the nations of today are, Exxon,
right.
AT&T,
right. Yes.
Dow Chemical, those are the nations of today. And then there was that quote that you just mentioned. I used two different clips of kind of this from the same
The other one you use, I think, is am I getting through to you, Mr. Beale? Which just made me laugh out loud.
Well, I am just going to Google. This is live Googling on a podcast.
Live Googling on a podcast. How crazy is that? Here we are trying to figure out who this is, and we both have the power of the internet at our hands. Yeah.
Beale.
Well, Faye Dunaway was in
and
it for
she was great. She
Robert
was the,
Robert Duvall as well.
Network executive.
Yeah. I'm going to have to watch it again too.
It's Peter Finch.
Yes.
Did you say Peter Boyle?
Peter Finch, I think. We may have to rewind and check up on that though, just to be sure.
Peter Finch.
Yeah.
Sorry,
yeah.
Peter. He's looking down on us now.
That's right. Thinking, yes.
What a couple of idiots.
Yeah, exactly. He's mad as hell and he's not going to take it anymore.
He's not going to take it anymore. Okay.
I thought it was also, I thought it was really interesting too that Chris Hedges said, Trump's a symptom. He's not the disease. And, that it's as if that there's been this sort of, what would, I think Jared Diamond calls it a creeping normalcy. It's like this incremental push towards this corporate. Takeover, corporate coup d'etat, right? It's been happening for a long time,
right? And just to finish off, actually, something we were talking about earlier, the reason Youngstown is a great metaphor for the corporate coup d'etat is that that's an area, the Mahoning River Valley, that when it was Steel City USA, It was, it was Democratic country.
Right,
The Democratic Party, generations of these people voted Democratic. And at one time, the Democratic Party actually cared about working class people. Part of the reason was that they were getting funding from unions, which is fine. But from the labor movement, which wanted a party that would represent working class interests. Well, now there is no labor movement, virtually. It's almost totally disappeared. The corporations did everything they could to make that happen, and so now the Democratic Party takes most of its money from corporations, just like the Republican Party, and so these people who for generations had voted Democratic in this Mahoning River Valley area where Youngstown is and where all the steel mills were. And they voted twice for Barack Obama, a black man, to be president of the United States. And again, so that kind of gives a lie to people who say they're just a bunch of racist hillbillies,
right.
Those people who voted for Trump. That it's more complicated than that.
Yes.
So these people, after voting twice for Obama, which would suggest they're not racist, they just felt so betrayed by both political parties, by the establishments of both political parties, that they were swayed and persuaded and conned by a slick talker who they'd been watching on TV, portraying himself as God's gift to, the business community.
Right.
Reality television is about as far from reality as you can get, as people really realize, I think. So he blows into town, this fast-talking salesman, saying, running against both parties. Trump was running against the establishments of both parties, and that's why they decided to vote for him, because there was no way they were going to vote for the establishment again. And as one person that we met there said, there was no way I was going to vote for another Bush or another Clinton.
Right.
And instead, they believed Trump's bullshit, basically.
And instead, they vote for, as Cornel West says, a thug, a neo-fascist, and a gangster. Which again,
yeah.
I mean, only Cornel West could say that, right? I mean, it's so.
And they didn't see him that way. These are not people, even who, not that it's a be all and end all, but these are not people who are reading the New York Times. These are not people who are checking out Amy Goodman on Democracy Now. They're just, what they knew about Trump was from watching him on The Apprentice.
Right. Right. He's relatable.
Sadly,
he's a business guy.
Yeah.
He's going to get the job done.
And he's saying what I believe
about the
establishments of both of these parties. He's attacking them, calling them a bunch of hypocrites. Even saying they're dominated by lobbyists, which is what he said about the other his opponents who were seeking the Republican nomination. Like, oh, they've got all their lobbyists here. I don't have any lobbyists. Well, it was all whatever it was. It worked, sadly. It was a close election, but much to everyone's surprise, certainly mine. He won, and then, the corporate establishment, who probably thought just as much as the rest of us that Trump was an idiot, they saw him as a useful idiot.
Right, right, a stepping stone of a sort. Hey, Fred, sadly, we're going to have to wrap up in a couple of minutes, and before I get to sort of where you take us in the film and compassion and kindness and the other and through this conversation over tea, which is just such a beautiful way for the film to resolve. And I guess it doesn't really resolve. This is about an ongoing conversation and about how we can actually, make a difference and so on. Can we talk a little bit about I think it's going to go down as one of my favorite moments in journalism. And that is, and I forget who the journalist is, but you're shooting in the hallway in Washington, I'm assuming, the woman politician who will not answer, and you've got the back of her head and you're following her, and you hold the camera. I mean, this extended shot of just not wanting to engage, not even going to give the question.
That woman you're talking about, the woman you're talking about was a former part of the George W. Bush administration. I think she was an advisor in Homeland Security or something. And she is now a major shareholder and executive in a defense industry.
Right.
A company that makes money off of war, basically. They build the Hummer, the Humvee.
Oh, right, the vehicles.
Which now has, as we show a clip from their promotional video, they now mount machine guns on it.
Right.
So it's like a little mini. It's not a tank, but it's
what would they call it? Armored personnel carrier
system.
Yeah.
I think so. Yeah. So now she's working and profiting from that company. And you can see her, folks. You can see her almost every week on CBS News as a expert consultant former Bush administration Homeland Security official, and never, ever hear mentioned that she's also the head of the defense industry or one of the heads. Never mentioned by the so-called journalists at CBS News, who, I mean, they must know. I mean, you know, of course they know.
Well, this is the culpability, right? And this is the contrast with personal responsibility and choice and ethics and all those things. Tell me a little bit as we wrap up, compassion in the other. Cornel West saying, you know, something about the human condition. You know, we're both wonderful and terrible at the same time. And then later in the interview saying he hopes that there's a Trump. Not that he hopes, but he feels like that there's a Trump and a Martin Luther King inside of every American.
Yeah.
I think that's a really fascinating notion.
Absolutely. I mean, it's, you know, I think it's really important to read. And if you're lucky enough to, you know, talk to philosophers, you know, because they have a wonderful overview and an insight. And I would say that, Cornel West is a philosopher, and that John Ralston Saul is a philosopher, and it sounds almost too lofty to say, read philosophers, but it's you get a kind of a higher level of discerning, reasoning. Observation from people who are at the highest levels of that kind of thing, like Cornel West and John Ralston Saul, and
huge fan of both of them. And my listeners are going to think I egged you on. I've got a master's degree in philosophy, Fred. I studied.
My God! Yeah, I didn't know that. I wasn't buttering you up.
Good. I'm glad you admitted it on air, because that's so funny. But I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, the idea, I think, of philosophy is to ask deeper questions. It's to try to peel back the layers. At least have a conversation that's meaningful and you know, just this sort of proverbs like notion of iron sharpening iron, right? And I think that's what Chris Hedges is talking about. I think it seems to me
And
I so love that he kind of winds up saying that we can save the world one person at a time. I mean, I think you really that thread for me of hope that runs throughout your film is really quite wonderful in a film that's really on some levels pretty darn bleak.
Yeah. Well, yeah. David, thank you very much, first of all, for saying that. And I think some people, I've had a few screenings and Q&As where people have said, oh, the film is so bleak. And I just remind them, you know, it's not. I don't think it is bleak.
No, I don't. I don't either. I disagree.
We show a terrible state of democracy and society in America, and you could say in the world. But we do, especially towards the end. I tried to offer that overview, that philosophical overview, and which very much is hopeful when you hear what. Particularly John Ralston Saul and Chris Hedges and Cornel West.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and how do and the question I think is, how do we get to the Martin Luther King inside all of us, right? I mean, what a beautiful notion. Fred, thanks so much for your time today. We've been talking to Fred Peabody about his new film, Corporate Coup d'Etat. Fred, it's coming to Hot Docs. Not really sure when exactly people are going to be listening to this, but we do know that there's going to be a theatrical release later in May. Vancouver,
that's
Toronto,
right.
And Calgary, and I would imagine too. Eventually, it'll be on demand video of some kind somewhere. But
we hope to get theaters in other cities in Canada and the U.S. But right now, the ones we definitely have booked are, Toronto, Vancouver, and Calgary. But I'm sure we'll get it to other cities, and there are festivals also, other festivals in Canada that we may show up at in your town, and you're right. It will eventually, I think, be on iTunes or something like that. where you, by the way, you can rent All Governments Lie on iTunes.
That's right.
Shameless plug.
You might as well get that in there. Yeah.
I should mention that at Super Channel, which is a pay service in Canada, as you probably know, they were there from the beginning as a supporter and investor in this film. And so they will be broadcasting it on their cable channel, Super Channel. And when they do that, they also have it available for streaming. But only if you subscribe to Super Channel,
right.
Sadly. But you have to wait for it on iTunes down the road, I guess, if you don't catch it.
Well, it's a delightful film. It's entertaining. It's challenging. It is kind of bleak, but I disagree with that person. I think it's like Cornel West said. He said, what did he say? He said one of the three great mysteries of life: history, love, and life, or something. He said near the end of the film, and I couldn't agree
more.
I know.
Yeah. He is so good.
He's wonderful.
At focusing things in, you know, half a sentence. That speak volumes.
That's
and
right.
Which you've
That's
never
right.
heard quite said quite that way before.
Isn't it wonderful? Yeah. Thanks for joining us today, Fred Peabody, on his new film, The Corporate Coup d'Etat. Thanks, Fred.
Thank you.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.